Coming up on Tech News Today, Tim Cook visits a reformed Foxconn. Does Google make more on iPhone than Android? And Spotify, how about Spotify? That's some good news, everyone. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, March 29th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6. Introducing the most powerful version yet of the only professional graphics suite made exclusively for Windows. For a free trial plus an exclusive limited time offer, go to Corel.com/TNT, promo code TWITX6. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Chad Johnson.
Filling in for Chad. Jason Howe.
It's going to be a wild day.
Back with us tomorrow. At least
good.
We're hoping. He hopes. Anyway, we miss him quite a bit. Well, we got some good stories for you today, and we are going to kick it all off with Sarah's favorite segment.
Kick it.
Really?
Yep. Kick it off, Chad. Oh! Or is it Pat and Peace?
You done schooled me. I was about to be like, hey, I'm supposed to do this.
Could it be the Westphalia of our times? Bloomberg suggests that Apple and Samsung's top leadership could be looking to strike a settlement, according to people familiar with the situation. Not the television show, but the situation.
And Jersey Shore joke.
Note that top-level executives at both Apple and Samsung have communicated lately about potential settlement options. I imagine envoys with briefcases passing between Samsung and Korea and Apple and Cupertino.
No, I would think maybe Apple's using, like, they're using Samsung's IM thing. I forget what that's called.
The proprietary text message.
And Samsung's using the iMessage back and forth as this kind of, like, the bridge.
Oh, if they're using the Messages app, I can guarantee you that half of the messages are getting dropped.
That's why
they're fighting. Because that app don't work.
See, that's what they're fighting. They're not communicating.
According to Bloomberg sources, Apple CEO Tim Cook does not seem to share his predecessor's passion about laying all foes to waste in this report. Cook appears to view litigation as a necessary evil, not a need for revenge. Meanwhile, Tim Cook's still playing Nixon going to China. He visited Foxconn Technology Group's newly built manufacturing facility for the iPhone in Zhengzhou, China today. And not only was this the first time that an Apple CEO has visited an actual production plant there, but the Fair Labor Association released its findings from the investigation of working conditions at the Foxconn Chinese plants, and they weren't all rosy. The watchdog found that in the last year, all three factories violated not just FLA code for hours worked, but in fact Chinese legal limits of 36 hours per overtime per month. During peak periods, employees worked more than 60 hours a week on average, and many more than 7 days in a row. So while Tim Cook is there, Foxconn has agreed to meet FLA and Chinese legal codes by July of 2013. So they need some time to ramp up to this, I get. They're going to cut the number of monthly overtime hours from 80 to 36, which is Chinese law, to compensate for the lost work hours. They plan to boost wages, hire thousands of new workers to help maintain production levels. And a concerted effort is also planned to improve safety and health conditions at the plants and in their dormitories. It is expected to cause a rise in prices, though.
Well, you got more workers out there, but they're also going to have all kinds of insurance costs and everything like that. But, I mean, that's just actually great news for the Chinese economy. That means there's thousands more jobs. If the iPad demand stays where it is, that's why these people were working so many more overtime hours. You need somebody to take care of these things. So more good news for China.
Yeah, with fewer people working fewer overtime hours, there's just fewer things getting done. Then again, with Apple's ridiculous profits and their crazy margins, I mean, they could afford to not raise the prices, at least of their products, for the foreseeable future. And sure, they're not raking in quite as many billions, but they're still raking in many billions.
They can survive with a giant cash hoard. You know, they're still okay.
Although they're giving dividends now, so that cash hoard
over years
getting very small. Tim Cook dressed up in a nice yellow suit and was walking around the factory looking good. Tim Cook comes out of this story looking very, very awesome, like visiting the plant.
But he's, and we mentioned this yesterday.
On the heels of an announcement.
This is something we asked ourselves, well, did Steve Jobs ever go to China? He didn't. But that's because he had Tim Cook to make these deals.
Only Tim Cook was the product guy. Could go to China.
Right. But he was probably, not only did he understand the business, but, you know, maybe he's just better in person. And everyone at Apple realized that. So he was the one who was dealing with a lot of these overseas transactions. It is interesting, though, that now that he's a CEO, he's still the guy that is the face over in China, and he's shaking hands, and he's touring Foxconn factories, and it's a very different persona than what we're used to.
Yeah.
Well, Cook's probably got a lot of experience dealing with, I don't know, a difficult boss for a very long time, so yeah. I assume he could probably smooth over anything if he stayed in this position long
exactly.
enough that he was brought in when Jobs was out every now and then. I mean, obviously, Cook can do this kind of thing, so it's pretty impressive that he's been in, not for a very long time, but making pretty big changes.
Well, now we don't want to give him too much credit. These changes come after public pressure, public embarrassment, and a forced hand of the Fair Labor Administration. So it's not like, you know, Tim is the one who had the idea to change the conditions. He's in a good place to take some credit for
it. Fair point.
Google earns more revenue from iPhone than Android, according to a report in The Guardian today. Now, here's what's going on. Google only generated about $550 million from Android since 2008 and earns far less from Android devices than it does from Apple handsets, if you believe The Guardian's back-of-the-envelope calculations based on Google's court filing in their court case with Oracle. A percentage of Android revenue as patent damages was put forth, in which the $550 million figure is extrapolated from a percentage of total revenue it's willing to pay Oracle. So 0.5% of revenue plus 0.015% of revenue are about $2.8 million. Now, The Guardian is playing fast and loose here with the numbers and trying to back out how much Google says they're making on Android, and that's where they get the $550 million. TC Sawtech at The Verge notes, it's likely the company is minimizing the revenue in this court case for damages as a defendant. In this case, Google's looking at a small portion of the app or ad revenue and not giving the patents Oracle is complaining about credit for all of their revenue. So that $550 million is certainly not Google's entire revenue based on Android. And Chris O'Brien over at Silicon Beat points out that Google actually pays to be the default search engine on Apple's Safari browser, and we don't know how much, but they don't pay anything to be the default search engine in Android because they run Android. They get that for free. So there's a calculation there as well. It's probably useless math then.
Yeah, so we have basically we have a bunch of information that we don't really have. We have extrapolations. We have some great headlines, though. It's always great to see Google making more money from Apple products. They're like, oh, look at the way this whole weird business is working. It just seems like kind of like the news cycle. Like, okay, this is what we need to drag out now.
Well, think of this as the general trend. I talk about, you know, rumors that Apple and Google have a continually icier relationship. Apple moved away in the new iPhoto app from Google Maps, for example. We see some instances where Apple would like to use another third-party company rather than worry about what Google's got going on just because Google is the biggest and the best. What if Google was no longer the default search engine because Apple said, you're just not going to be because we're not in the mood?
I'm not sure what Apple would switch to, but let's say they went to Bing.
That's sort of unthinkable.
Or some new thing comes along.
Right.
Google loses a fair amount of revenue from ads generated by people doing Google searches on their iPhones and iPads.
I think that's where this conversation gets interesting because it's like, okay, well, it depends on how you look at these numbers and what you factor into it. But if it's ever to the point where Google is making a bunch of money from Apple and then cannot, then it changes somewhat.
So the upshot of all of this is, if you're seeing these headlines today, yeah, Google makes a lot of money off iOS right now, and it would hurt them if they lost that. There's no indication that they're going to lose that anytime soon, at least not from the default search engine portion. And they probably make a lot more on Android than they're letting on in this Oracle case, because it's not in their best interest to have a big number there when Oracle can say, aha, then you owe us this many millions of dollars based on that amount of money. Let's move on to another story that's getting a lot of buzz today. The Paper app. Now, you talked about this on iPad today. It was your app cap.
It certainly was.
Former Courier team members have put this together. If you remember, the Courier was a Microsoft Skunkworks project that was never released, but got a lot of fans, even in just the leaks of it that were out. George Pechnig is the co-founder of Pioneer Studios, putting together paper. John Harris, who worked on the Zune, the Xbox, and the Pioneer Studios brand, co-founder of the Courier Project. Andrew Allen, filmmaker who worked on Courier. Julian Walker, an engineer who worked on graphics and user interface for Microsoft Sea Dragon, Photosynth, Bing Maps, and Silverlight. And John Ikeda, inventor who worked on Xbox accessories, including the Xbox 360 game controller and Kinect, all working on paper, which is paper. It's trying to reproduce the effects of paper. You get a free fountain pen. They make their money off selling you other implements to write with when you're in the app. But it's being hailed for its brilliance of simplicity, which is what everyone was excited about with the Courier that Microsoft ended up killing.
Yeah, this is a very interesting app because many, not all, but many of the original Courier team, and for anybody who kind of forgets what that deal was, is it sort of came to public knowledge back in 2008, I believe, and then Microsoft publicly killed the project in 2010 before anything ever went to market. But there was we knew enough from behind the scenes to know what people were working on. A lot of people then left who had been working on the Courier project and other things, but had sort of become disillusioned, went to create this app that is supposed to mimic paper more than pretty much any other app I've seen. It's not the first notation app. It's not the first art app. It's not the first anything. You can see Tom's
But it's the first
there.
App I've ever been able to use where I drew something people could tell what it was.
The man looking at a computer.
I mean, if you've seen some of the draw something posts that have leaked out on Twitter from people, you know I can't draw.
Yeah,
but I was like, wow, this is easy. And what it is the speed at which you draw changes the thickness of the fountain pen. And then when you buy the other implements, they work that way as well.
Yeah,
there's also the rewind thing where you do this.
I was
and
reading
it actually
it.
Undoes your strokes.
It's a two-hand counterclockwise. It's based on the jog
wheel.
That's
why I can't do it because I kept going. All right.
He was a filmmaker. One of the guys is a filmmaker who was in the company. He wanted a jog wheel like he would have for film editing. I'm like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. Why would you have that? But again, I think you said this on iPad. I haven't seen that anywhere else before, the idea of undo that way.
It's completely new. The app is free, at least, you know, for your initial tools. It works really well. The drawing tools, it's probably you'd almost get more out of it if you had an external stylus. But even with your finger, I mean, it's really nice. I went ahead and bought a couple extra tools, and I really liked them. But it is extremely simple. Now, there is another app within the last 24 hours that was also introduced by also some of the original Courier team that is very, very different.
Yeah, Jay Allard, who was the head of the Courier project at Microsoft, has been advising and financially backing the development of Tapose, another Courier-like application for the iPad. Tapose launched their app on March 27th. It cost you $3. I don't like it nearly as much. You get more things right off the top, but look, I can't draw on this thing. Okay, that's probably
not exactly a fair test.
That's not a fair test.
But you
at
get
all.
Two, you know, you get multi-screen functionality.
Yeah, it's kind of the same idea, but it's really buggy. I can't get it to change.
Of the two, it looks like Tapose was trying to do a lot more what the Courier could do with the dual screen kind of a layout, because the Courier was supposed to have two screens, two independent kind of things going on at a time. But paper seems to be a really just like a stripped down version. It's like, okay, you're just going to use this to draw.
It's interesting to me that people who came from a unified team not that long ago have put together and released in 2 days of each other very, very different apps based on stuff that they had taken away from their projects within Microsoft. Tapose, I think their issue is it was a Jay Allard-funded production, but also a Kickstarter-funded production.
Right.
I don't know if this is a result of things needing to be rushed, but as far as controls go, it does feel like it's not ready for prime time. You know, the pages don't fold the way that you would expect from an iPad app, at least at this point, where even though paper has a lot less functionality, it has a lot less functionality on purpose, and it works really seamlessly.
It's one of those things where if you limit the functionality, everything works better because right. you're not confused by all the options and all of that.
And all this made me look at all the Courier videos and go, I really wanted that product to exist.
I just wanted the actual Courier.
Yeah, that had so many cool functions, and I'm like, are these both apps aren't anywhere close to Courier.
They're almost opposite sides of the spectrum, mm-hmm. really. But again, came from a very creative team.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, which is all about drawing when you're serious on your computer. This episode brought to you by CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6. And get a great picture. What makes a difference is having a powerful, versatile, and easy-to-use set of tools you can trust. That's what we were just talking about. And on your desktop, That's what the new CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6 is all about. It gives you vector illustration, page layout, photo editing, web design software built right in there. Everything you need to express your style and creativity. CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6 is good for not only web graphics, but if you're doing logos, you're doing some flyers, brochures, those kinds of things, or even big things like billboards and car wraps, you can do it all in CorelDRAW. Give it a shot. CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6 includes everything for both experienced and aspiring designers in one affordable package exclusive for Windows users. 1,000 fonts, 1,000 stock photos, 10,000 clip art images, 250 templates. It's designed for your Windows environment. Fully 64-bit enabled, advanced open type support, and more. Try it for free. Don't have to take our word for it. 30-day free trial of CorelDRAW Graphics Suite X6 is available for an exclusive limited time at Corel.com/TNT. That's Corel.com/TNT. If you decide to buy CorelDRAW, use the promo code TWITX6 and you'll get an exclusive 10% off. That offer varies by country. You have until April 30th, so go do it. Corel.com/TNT. And if you do decide to keep after the 30 days, use that promo code TWITX6 and get an exclusive 10% off. We thank CorelDRAW Suite X6 for their support of Tech News Today. I like free things. Sarah, do you have anything free to tell me about?
I do. In fact, it's something that was not going to be free, but is going to be free.
Even better.
Longer. In fact, indefinitely. And I'm talking about Spotify, at least in the U.S. Now, you may have remembered that when Spotify first came to the U.S., it was, it's all going to be free for a while, but eventually we're going to take you down to 10 hours a month cap free. If you go over that, then you're probably going to want to go up to one of the paid tier subscriptions because we're not just going to give you all that stuff for free. I know Ayaz had mentioned to me a while ago, you know, I don't feel like I'm staying within 10 hours a month and it's never telling me anything. I'm never getting any sort of an error message. That's because they never actually instituted that limit. And they've said now publicly, we're not going to anytime soon. It was supposed to happen 3 months ago. It's not happening, and it's not happening anytime soon. That's at least in the U.S. There are a couple other things that they're changing, too, though. In Sweden, in Finland, in Norway, and in the Netherlands, and Spain, they'll no longer be subjected to the 5-song-per-month limit. That was something that they were used to already.
If you're striking in Spain today, turn on Spotify.
That's right, and just same song over and over. Yeah. Go nuts. They are still capped at those 10 hours per month, though. Again, you have to remember, Spotify has been around in Europe much longer than the U.S., so not only do they have different models, but they've been able to get a little bit more data on people's usage than here. Now, the deal, the reason that they're deciding to not institute...
Yeah, don't they want to make money?
10 hours a month caps. Yeah, of course, they want to make as much money off of the U.S. audience as possible is they're still negotiated with music labels, right? And you have to give users an incentive to upgrade to free accounts. But because, we've talked about this before, the music subscription service online market is still so young, there's still a little bit of a proof of concept that I think a lot of people have to get used to. Like, wow, I really can listen to pretty much anything I want to listen to. That's great. It's not that people have an issue with paying. It's just that they have to learn to pay monthly for a subscription rather than album by album.
So they want to keep them on the free plan for longer so they get used to using Spotify and are more likely to then upgrade to the paid plans.
Exactly. And you know, this goes for Spotify and other music services that there is no free version that will give you access to mobile or on tablets, that sort of thing. I mean, that is where, you know, that'll get you. Spotify, you think, free music? How wonderful. Hey, we're all more and more mobile. You can't get your Spotify music in the mobile version unless you go ahead and pay, I think it's like a $10 per month model. Some artists, of course, hate these free terms. The fact that Spotify is allowing us to not be capped at 10 hours a month for the foreseeable future has many artists up in arms. They have a lot of great deals, but they have some big holdouts of artists that say, we refuse to participate.
The artists get paid anyway, whether Spotify
gets
paid or not. So I think their problem
though.
Is that they're not getting paid in the large increments that they get from downloads. The music companies are loving things like Spotify because they get to keep more of the royalties. They get to keep more of the revenue. And I guess what they're saying is as long as services like Spotify remain free or cheap, then there's less incentive for the music companies to give us a better deal.
Right. Specifically, a couple of speculations. All Things D has a good one. Spotify is in the process of raising some money right now. They've had crazy growth, extraordinary growth, you might say. If you have less free listening, you may have less growth, and you may have less interested investors. Paid Content says...
Juice those numbers.
Exactly. Paid Content says this is because of Facebook. When Spotify and Facebook got together, and now everybody sees all of my Spotify usage in the the live news feed on the right-hand side, that that gets a lot of people to click through and say, well, what's the Spotify thing? Maybe I'll check it out. Now, it doesn't mean that people start paying for Spotify right off the bat, but they get used to using it. It's almost the Microsoft Windows Phone model. Just get them in the hands of everyone.
And they will love
Don't
us.
Don't make them pay a lot. Just get them used to the interface, and then you've got them.
So I've been playing with Spotify for, seems like a really long time at this point, and I've been using it way more than 10 hours. I've been using tracks more than 5 times at a month. And the thing is, the more I use it and the more things that come to the actual software, like with the little applications inside, I end up using it a lot more and more. But then every ad starts getting a little bit more annoying and a little bit more... I don't know. It's actually winning me over. It's like, well, if I pay them, these ads go away. Because I just want to listen to the music. Just let me listen to the music. And after a while, you're going to get worn down. I know I'm getting pretty close to going.
You're almost pulling the trigger.
Almost. But I think, I mean, this is a great thing. You keep it, as long as it's free for right now, I'm pretty sure that the second they change it, they got me, I think. I'm just waiting for them to say, no, that's it. You can't listen to that anymore.
Well, you might be waiting a while.
Good. I'm glad to wait, and I will. I usually leave.
Well, what they're hoping is maybe we don't ever have to put the limit in if we can just annoy you enough that you'll pay anyway.
I just walk away when the ads go on.
Yeah. All right. I want to throw some numbers at you guys.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. It's time for By the Numbers. According to new Nielsen report, 49.7% of mobile subscribers in the U.S. owned smartphones as of February. That's up from 36% a year ago. That means we are probably now, since it's at the end of March, at over 50% of U.S. cellular subscribers own a smartphone. Two-thirds of those who got a new phone in the last 3 months chose a smartphone over a feature phone. The feature phones are the ones that have limited apps or no apps or limited data connectivity. Android-based phones lead the U.S. smartphone market with a 48% share. Apple's iPhone at 32%, BlackBerry at 11.6%. Meanwhile, smartphones also eating into PCs. According to IDC, the PCs running the Windows operating system on any x86-compatible CPU slipped from a leading 35.9% share in 2011 among all connected devices down to 25.1%. And they think it will slip from 35.9% in 2011 down to 25% in 2016. They say the number of Android-based devices running on ARM CPUs will grow modestly from 29.4% in 2011 to a market-leading 31.1% share. Now, some of that's from cheap tablets, so it doesn't mean a cash cow for anybody. But obviously, smartphones, the place to be, according to the numbers.
Except if you're Dell. Dell decided to...
Oh, what's Dell doing with its smartphone business of these numbers?
Yeah, you know, Dell's got... They have a smartphone business. A lot of people don't really realize that, but they decided...
A streak.
That's when they started in August 2010.
Poorly named
They tried to go with the Streak, and they did introduce the Venue and the Venue Pro, which had Windows Phone on it. And today they announced they're not making any more smartphones for the United States.
What? Oh.
They're saying what they're going to do is they're going to focus these smartphones, and they're going to go over to emerging markets like India. So you'll be able to get those if you really, really want that. And the thing is, Dell's still saying, though, they're going to introduce more mobile products in the U.S. So if it's not a smartphone... And they got rid of netbooks in the last
tablet.
Year. Which they've been trying to do for a couple of years, and they've been awful at. So, good luck, Dell. So, if you want to go into the smartphone business, you don't want to be Dell.
There's one fewer competitor in the smartphone space.
Well, but if they're not focused on smartphones, maybe they will not be freakishly bad at the tablets going forward, since they want to... Obviously, focus their efforts in other places.
I would think with Windows 8, they probably got a good chance at this because they're all like enterprise based.
Yeah,
the smartphone.
That's a really good point.
They're smartphone based. They've been trying with the smartphones for a really long time, and they just don't get it. I don't think it's even possible. I mean, like HP tried it. They bought Palm. That didn't work. Dell tried it internally. That's not working. This is why I still think Dell's going to buy RIM. This is why. Because they can't do it, they can get somebody else to do it.
Yeah, Dell's not going to make a bunch of Android tablets. Is my guess. I think you're right. They're going to make a bunch of Windows 8 tablets. Later this year, and they're going to abandon the smartphone space because they're not any good at it. I mean, we could poke fun at them saying, hey, smartphones booming, but smartphones booming for Samsung. It's booming for Apple. It's maybe booming for HTC.
I think
that's not booming for everybody.
It's smart of Dell. People don't associate Dell with smartphones.
Yeah.
I had to remember, like, what did Dell make? Oh, yeah, the Streak. I didn't actually know that from memory. I had to look it up earlier. It makes more sense for them.
Well, they were ahead of the curve. They had a 5-inch phone, and people were like, that's crazy. Why would you want a 5-inch Android phone? And then Samsung yesterday, it's like, sold 5 million of those Galaxy Notes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they were just
ahead. That sounds like a familiar story.
Y'all ready for some good news?
Sure.
Time for the news fuse. Good news fuse. Good news for you folks who like your displays, like your morals, flexible. LG announced it is mass producing a 6-inch flexible e-paper display that can be bent up to 40 degrees. The display has a resolution of 1024 by 768 and can handle being whacked with a mallet without being busted. It's pretty cool.
Good news for those of you who like your search engines like you like your stalkers not tracking you. Yahoo announced that its Do Not Track tool will go live, available worldwide in the summer. Yahoo didn't explain many details about this Do Not Track tool, but said it will be simple.
Good news for those of you who like your big box stores like you like your murder cases closed. Best Buy is closing 50 stores in the U.S. in 2013. However, those employees could be transferred to Best Buy Mobile's new smaller stores. The company is opening 100 of them also in 2013.
So if you're a smaller employee, you're safer.
Or more mobile.
This is good news if you like your RIM executives like you like your pottery. Fired. RIM CEO Thorsten Hines has decided to dismiss a whole bunch of high-level people, including RIM co-founder Jim Balsillie, who's resigning from the board. CTO David Yak is retiring. Jim Rowan, COO of Global Operations, is out. Hines also said on the call they had a record number of subscribers in the past quarter. And most intriguing, he's open to partnerships and licensing deals. But RIM still missed expectations on shipments, which fell in a hot market. So the All Things D headline, RIM blows it again.
Good news if you like your tablets like you like your dates. Cheap. Digitimes reports Amazon is working on 2 to 4 new tablets for this very year. Citing industry sources, there'll be a 10.1-inch model to be priced around $250 to $300. An 8.9-inch model may or may not happen. Oh, and NVIDIA's CEO expects Tegra 3 tablets to cost under $200 this summer, which is a lot less than he said not that long ago.
Good news, if you like the process of collecting money from your class action lawsuit, like you like your eggs, over easy.
Oh, jeez.
Apple iPhone 4 users who were affected by AntennaGate can collect $15 at iPhone4settlement.com. That's number 4. You'll have till the 28th of August to make a claim. All the details, if you are eligible, are at that site. Again, that's iPhone4settlement.com.
Fine. Good news if you like your wireless carriers, like you like your deadbeat dads, abandoning things.
Oh, this is getting weird.
Sprint says it will no longer carry WiMAX phones. Sprint is in the process of moving to LTE and is expected to introduce an HTC LTE phone next month. Its LTE service will launch mid-year in several markets, including San Antonio.
Good news if you like your ultra-low-cost PCs, like your gratification, delayed. The Raspberry Pi will be delayed in the UK because the device needs to receive a certification mark from the European community. The devices are in the country but need testing before consumers can get their hands on them.
Good news if you like your social network founders like you like your router. Networking. Mark Zuckerberg met with Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda briefly. The two discussed the tsunamis and how social networking could be useful in helping those affected by the disasters, also by facilitating communications. Noda also mentioned that it was strange to meet Zuckerberg in person after watching the movie The Social Network.
All right. That's enough good news. Time for the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Research publishing specs for a Star Trek tricorder. And if that's not enough for you, it's open source, Linux powered. Dr. Peter Janssen has developed a handheld mobile computing device that has a number of sophisticated embedded sensors. He began working on the project back in 2007, wants to make it easy for others to reproduce. So he has made the complete schematics for 2 of his 4 models available under the terms of the Taper non-commercial hardware license. The underlying source code of the device's software environment is available over GPL or under a GPL license. Janssen explained that he hopes the project will encourage scientific curiosity and help people better understand the world. So the Mark 1 and the Mark 2 tricorder, powered by 6 AAA batteries, more energy efficient. The Mark 1 is more energy efficient than the Mark 2 EMH, which is that's a joke from Ars Technica's Ryan Paul, powered by Andy Dick. It fits inside the device's how built-in sensors can measure temperature, humidity, atmospheric pressure, magnetic fields, color, ambient light level, GPS location, and distance to a surface.
Wow. That's all I can say. Wow.
That's all any of you can say?
I'm just staring.
I love
it.
This.
I'm just staring because it's real.
It's actually not the first time there's been a tricorder either. There was one marketed in the late 90s, but this one's a lot more sophisticated than that.
Oh, I'm saying, wow, this is amazing. I'm so glad that there are people in the world who say, I'm going to build this.
I like living
in
the future.
I'm going to make a very intricate video explaining how I built this because I'm not merely a fan. I'm a fan that creates.
We do live in the future, and Sarah can tell us what's going to happen in the future.
You're so right.
On the calendar.
Ring.
Incoming message.
No.
No.
That's not the calendar.
It's all right. Ring.
There it is.
The HTC One X, the One S, and the One V handsets are expected to arrive in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland on April 2nd. The One X, of course, is that quad-core smartphone. It's going to cost about 600 euros, which is the equivalent of about 795 US dollars. The One S is the dual-core Qualcomm S4 processor model, 499 euros. And then the One V is a single-core CPU, 299 euros. So those are all coming to Middle Europe, if they call themselves that soon. A source tells Android Central that an HTC One X variant will be unveiled at an event with Sprint on April 4th and will be called the Evo One. Source also says that on June 6th is the ship date. Thank you, Chad. Thank you very much. 4.7 inches, 720p LCD screen. Originally thought of to be an AMOLED, so we're not sure yet, but this is different information. Dual core processor and LTE ready.
That's a lot of HTC One news.
Not time yet.
What are you doing? Trigger finger? Google has announced that it's rolling out Android 4.0.4 for GSM, not LTE versions.
It must be under transition.
Just keep going.
Of the Nexus S and Galaxy Nexus phones and the Motorola Zoom Wi-Fi tablet. And Google says more devices will be included in the coming weeks, but yeah, we know how that goes. And finally, tomorrow, Facebook will force all pages to switch to the redesign of timeline for pages. So hooray for baby pictures of brands.
Yeah, I don't know what they put on their timeline.
They're not making
the
profile
first,
switch.
The first profile
switch. So that's
different.
A distinction. If you've got a personal profile, this doesn't necessarily apply to you.
This is pages.
This
right.
is pages for yeah. brands. And
let's check what's incoming, Chad.
I've been trying to get in here for a long time.
Incoming message.
Oh, look at that.
It got here.
We actually have a video message recommending a popular iOS app while it is in progress, or at least right after he finished using it.
Hey, this is Sean from New Jersey. I just got back from running from zombies. But I can actually hear them coming back towards the door right now, so I might have to go back outside to draw them away again. But this is all thanks to the iOS app called Zombies Run. It's the best app to get you running, and running for your life, evidently. Today's my 21st.
He's very worried about the zombies.
I'm really afraid I might not make it until my 22nd, so I just want to say, great show. I just want to tell you about this app called Zombies Run, and take care.
And Brian Brushwood's been running, apparently somebody in the chat room, Matt 3, says he ran 5K today because he was running from zombies.
Yeah, I hear this is a powerful motivator. A friend of mine was talking about this nonstop, saying, look, if you want motivation to run, just, you don't have to pretend there's an apocalypse. Apparently there is an apocalypse. I just don't know where the zombies are who are chasing you, but
They're behind you. That's
me.
All you need to know.
Don't even look back.
Don't look back.
Just run. But I like this idea.
Paul Clifford wrote in via email. He is the owner and chief creative officer at Trinity Digital Media and said, hey, you may have mentioned this, but I wrote a post over at a blog I thought you guys might be interested in. Here's the backstory. A couple of days ago, I noticed the new play category in the Google bar. After poking around, I noticed that Dark Tide was available for rent and said see it before theaters on the cover. I did some digging and found it's coming out in early April. In fact, April 12th is when it's coming out. So this kind of surprised me since this isn't a direct-to-video horror flick, but one with some well-known stars like Halle Berry, an Oscar winner. What do y'all think? Is this the beginning of a new model where they rent new movies for $10, cheaper than two tickets to the theater, DVD Blu-ray releases for $2 to $4 and put old stuff on Amazon? Well, I did some digging too when he tipped us off about this. It wasn't just that movie with Halle Berry, Dark Tide, but also The Hunter from Magnolia Pictures were both sort of quietly put on sale for a 48-hour rental through Amazon Instant Video Service and Google Play for $10. Didn't make a big deal out of it. And The Hunter has Willem Dafoe in it. So these are not, you know, direct-to-DVD style movies. I didn't hear any theaters screaming about this, but I didn't hear anybody really talking about it.
That's the weird thing. I've seen this on iTunes in the past where there are movies that are available before they're available in theaters. These have been somewhat smaller movies, but still, they're perfectly legal to download and watch, and you don't have to go to the theater. But I wonder why keeping it kind of on the down low helps anybody.
Well, if you want to test it,
yeah,
wouldn't you want to test it
yeah.
and let people know about it? Because it's not a very good test if nobody knew it was there.
It's not like Amazon's like, if the theaters find out about this, we're screwed. I mean, yeah. obviously they have some sort of an agreement going on. But I wonder why it's
that's
not
my guess.
That easy to discover.
It's a compromise where somebody really wants to test it. The only way the theaters would sign off on it is if they're like, okay, but you can't promote it. You can't tell anybody.
Right. Can't be above the fold.
Yeah.
Next email from Alan, and per his request, I will say it's time for HTML5 Wars.
We don't have a graphic for that.
No, we don't, he asked nicely.
There we go.
I think Simon and I are in agreement. He's talking about the conversation that we've had all week about HTML5. HTML5 likes to keep it simple with basic text boxes, buttons, and checkboxes. I will point out that HTML5 does introduce some new controls for mobile, which are more subtle, like data inputs, number inputs, etc. But since UI standards move fast, I'd argue that what HTML has kept are the right building blocks while leaving the rest up to developers. Case in point, between Windows 8 Metro, OS 10 Lion, iOS, and ICS... ice cream sandwich, and Ubuntu, and Chrome OS, etc. The standard toolbars and menus and folder trees with their little plus buttons have been going out of style in favor of simple search boxes, bigger buttons, touch gestures, etc. It's actually great that we get this kind of organic evolution of the interface, so I'm definitely in favor of less is more.
I think they can agree to disagree, but it's been an interesting debate between these two
Absolutely.
Guys in our feedback section. Also, CLT Steve in the chat room points out that Magnolia Pictures is the theatrical and home entertainment distribution arm of Wagner Cuban, which is an integrated group of properties owned by Todd Wagner and Mark Cuban that includes Landmark Theaters chain and HDNet. Cable
wow.
network. HDNet has done some experimenting mm-hmm. with putting movies on HDNet movies mm-hmm. before they show up in theaters before. So maybe that explains what's going on with these movies.
Last email from Nancy. Hello, I'm working with producers of a documentary called War of the Web, the documentary that Tom had mentioned last Friday on Tech News Today. Tom had mentioned during the show that he liked the idea of demystifying the internet, so I wanted to let Twit know about a little preview clip that we released yesterday, a little Internet 101 type video on packet switching. You're welcome to share it. We'll have the link in the show notes. And just to show how much something like this is needed, we took to the streets to find out how much the average person knows about the internet. They also have a video for that. And that's it.
This is great. I love these little teasers here.
Application that operates on it at the destination. This allows them to travel independently over different paths. The packets leave from the server where the file is stored and pass through copper and optical fiber cables. When they arrive at your computer, the packets are reassembled and the content you requested becomes available.
This is exactly the kind of stuff that needs to be done. Explain this stuff in visual way so people are like, I hear packet switching. I have no idea what that means. Get a better understanding of it. So
let
thanks,
Congress
Nancy.
Watch it.
Appreciate that. And thanks to you folks for submitting stories at our subreddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go to let us know what stories you'd like us to consider. And we look at how many votes they get. So get in there and vote for the stories you like. You don't even have to submit anything. Just go do some voting. You know, be one of those kind of people. Let us know what you would like to hear us cover. We look at this every day. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHORE. You can send us a video message like we had today. Send that to tnt@twit.tv. Just send us the link. Darren Kitchen joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.